sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I'm here with Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate. How are you doing this rainy Saturday morning?
Well, this Saturday morning that rains is kind of one of those days where you're going, do I really want to get up and go to the radio?
I told the guys from SWBC the same thing of boy, this is usually I'm just rip roaring to go on a Saturday morning, and this morning I was like, "Oh boy, this bed feels
would
good.
Feel good to turn over, right?
Yeah.
Or stay there." Well, guess what? I got excited when I started thinking about some solutions to our FHA and VA buyers that really don't get looked at.
It is a very big hurdle that we are having to walk people through and over, is getting an offer approved or accepted with an FHA or a VA loan. And this morning we have our money men from SWBC Mortgage, Matt McLean and Dean Riddell. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good morning, Becky. Good morning, Mark.
Doing good morning.
Fantastic.
Good morning, Matt. Dean.
Good morning.
Great.
I wish Dean would get more comfortable when he's here.
I kind of relax.
You can't see it, listeners, but it is. He takes the chair, and it's like a recliner. He is ready for the questions. He is rip-roaring to go. I love it.
Well, we are going to talk about some nuances, and thank you for my cheat sheet that you brought with you. We love this little cheat sheet thing because it's hard to remember all the little nuances about the charges for the different loans and what the qualifications are and that kind of thing. Back when I started selling real estate, we had one contract and it had check marks at the top of it that said FHA, VA, or conventional loan. And that was it.
There was no FHA addendum or VA addendum?
Nope.
Wow.
I know. That was, I mean, but in 1876, we did not have.
you had white out, though.
Yeah.
You had
that's
your white out and your.
And it was on the NCR paper, you know, that we had, I think, six copies. So you really had to use a sharp, heavy pen to make it go through.
And Dean and I, we go back to where we were hand typing documents.
Do you know, I still have my typewriter. It's up on the top of a cabinet. My sister-in-law wanted it, so I saved it for her. And I just talked to her the other day, and I said, "Do you still want this typewriter?" She goes, "Oh, no, I got one at a garage sale." I'm going, "Well, good. I'm getting rid of it then."
One of those that makes the good old days, maybe not quite the good old days. If you want to join the conversation with us this morning, you can give us a call at 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000. We'd love for you to join in. And if you want to go back and listen to any program, you can subscribe to the podcast through the iHeartMedia app or anywhere else that you subscribe to a podcast. Just type in Becky Ivins and take a look.
Give us a call, 840-1000, right here in the metro. You know, things are still multiple offer. Most everything that hits the market, if it's priced right. Now, if it's overpriced, you don't get multiple offers. So you've got to still kind of pay attention to pricing, because I've had a couple of sellers recently that just insisted on a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, okay, but we're going to take it down to a reasonable price. And we sign saying that the price will be, if we don't get showings and at least one offer in the first week, we need to change the price.
Right. A higher price doesn't necessarily mean a higher offer.
That's true. Yeah. And buyers and appraisers are still out there and do have somewhat of a brain in their head, you know. They know when you overprice a house. Mm-hmm. If it's worth $275 and you price it at $325, you're not going to get offers. And even if you do, it's not going to appraise.
Right.
So cash is king, I will say.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of cash floating around.
Okay.
Why do we have a lot of cash floating around? Dean?
Where did that come from? I don't know, but you're seeing it come out of the woodwork with the various offers that you're getting written today with the escalation clauses in there, and people aren't batting an eye and coming up with the cash to make it happen.
Well, the thing is you don't make any money
right.
on your investments much. I mean, so why not buy a house where at least it's kind of a solid investment? Right. Those can go down in value right. as well.
Right. But it seems I agree that some of that's coming from investment money, that safe investment money. They're all low interest rates right now. So real estate's a great investment. One of the other things I'm seeing is a lot of trust, a lot of money that's coming from like generational wealth, something that's been a family trust, and then they're purchasing through that.
Well, okay. I've not seen that so much, but
I've had two buyers that's just recently in this that is where
the
come
money
from.
Came from.
Yeah. Is it would have been a
payout
a
over
first
time.
Time it would have been a first time home buyer mm-hmm. getting a loan, and the family says, we have a family trust we can purchase this through.
And they probably pay the family trust back, I would
right.
think.
I
probably.
Would think, but family finances gets fun.
Oh yeah.
And we're also seeing more out of town, more move-ins, more relocations from the West Coast, from the East Coast that are selling in higher markets and moving to our market.
We get some of the weirdest buyers that call us. We are a Google-trusted real estate company. So they did the background check and checked our reviews to be sure everything was valid, all that kind of stuff. And we get people who go to Google and search best real estate agent, Oklahoma or Oklahoma City, and our name will come up most often. And people call and go, well, I want to move to Oklahoma, so I need someone to help me find a house. Well, okay. What part of Oklahoma? Well, I don't know.
Never been there.
Right.
That came up
right.
last
Never
week.
Been there. Never been I there. Mean, we're from Texas. And some of them, the Texas political climate in the big cities is getting too much for them. It's getting too purple. And, you know, Texans are Texans. They're red-blooded, red political card-carrying people, right? but they don't seem to have a direction as to where they're going. And we had one from Arkansas, three generations of women wanting to move to Oklahoma. And none of them had a job and thought that they were going to buy a house. They really didn't have money either. One aunt had money, and they were going to try to convince the aunt to be the purchaser of the home. And so I was going, you guys work that out. Figure out if you can get a loan, but you're going to need a job to get a loan or at least stable income. It doesn't have to be a job. It can be maybe there is a family trust. To wear or an annuity or a retirement or whatever. And all that counts as income, right, Dean? Mm-hmm.
Yep, as long as you've got that. We talked about it about a month ago, 2 months ago. An investment account they take a distribution from. We can use that as qualifiable income as long as there's a 3-year continuance. So we've got to show that.
There's enough money to last 3 years at that level.
Last 3 years. You touched on something that I've got two calls this week on out-of-state buyers who wonder why they can't use their Oregon income to buy a primary residence in Oklahoma that they're moving to. So, you know, we get into the woods with them a little bit. Are you relocating? Do you have a transfer letter from your employer? And some of the perception is, why can't you use my Oregon income? I'm buying a primary residence in Oklahoma. You know, any lender can't use that existing employment to qualify in Oklahoma for a primary residence unless you're doing a second home, non-owner occupied.
So in all of the remote work that we're doing, so people, I mean, that's when it's happened, they can work from anywhere, but if the business is still like in Oregon, can't, even if they work remotely?
If they can work remotely, that's fine.
Then
you
can.
We're good.
Okay.
We just need the letter from the employer that says Mark is transferring to Oklahoma, he can work remotely. His income is X, his position is Y, his start date is Z. And we're okay.
That's great information for someone out there. And we're going to be back with more, and we're going to talk about FHA, VA. If you know someone who is needing a VA loan, you want to hang on and listen to it here at Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We have the guys from SWBC, Dean Riddell and Matt McLean, and we're talking about finances and lending and VA loan.
Okay. You're wanting my license number?
If you're ready, you want to start with, that's not really.
47388 is my license number. What's yours, Mark?
Mine is 180484.
Okay, let's continue.
Let's go, 196-895.
And mine is 1197740.
There you go. Lots of license numbers there, but we are not required as realtors, right. Real licensees to do that, but the lenders are.
So. There's a lot of regulations. There's a lot of things you have to stay within the boundaries, and one of those is all lenders have to announce their lending number. Mm-hmm. So if you're ever talking to someone, you're not sure they're an official lender, ask for their number.
Ask for their license number. How many lender letters? I see more lender letters than you do because I get multiple offers on the listings. But I will say that less than 1 out of 10 actually have a signature on them.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Well, there's a name there, but there's no signature. I got a really strange one this week that says basically, and I've not seen this before. I'll have to pull it up and tell you guys what it is, but it was basically, we are not responsible to any third parties such as realtors and they named all the people they're not responsible to, and it was because this person's not qualified. They issued a letter that said, after review of this, it appears that you may be qualifiable, or something like that. And I was going, that's not qualified.
That's not a qualified.
That is the weakest letter I've ever read. And I do read those letters, every single one of them, because they do say different things on them. Your SWBC Mortgage has really good lender letters because you go into detail. There's another lender out here that does really good lender letters, and they have like a little box of all the qualifying things they need.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll have check marks, verified, 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 not yet verified, that kind of thing, so that you know where you stand. So I like that. You guys, go ahead and let's see if we can come up with a box.
You know, in lending, I think that's the one thing we, not SWBC, we as a
industry
do a poor job of producing pre-approval letters for people that aren't ready. And so we take the stance that what we do affects lives. So we're going to ask the right questions. We're going to vet them, do our homework, do our due diligence before we provide that pre-approval letter. But it's once a week, Becky, I'm hit with someone who says, you know, I'm in the middle of a contract, I wrote a contract, I got a pre-approval from A, B, and C, and now I'm finding out I don't qualify based on credit. Well, how does that happen? I mean, a pre-approval letter was provided 3 weeks prior that said, you're good to go.
See, this one didn't even say they had reviewed the credit score.
Yeah. Mm.
So if the lender letter doesn't say, according to the credit review that we've done and the verification of funds available for the down payment or such and employment verification, well, if you don't have any of that, that's not a pre-approval letter.
I really can't.
That is a wish list, right? So, okay, VA. Let's talk about VA because we've got a lot of veterans in Oklahoma. And when someone wants to buy a house VA, they really are kind of looked over when there's multiple offers. And we wonder why is that they're looked over? Why do you think it is, Mark?
Well, you have the difference comes in the part of the way the appraisal is handled. Usually it's 100% financing. that's being done. And there's a lot of other kind of little hurdles for the seller side.
Well,
to get over.
It's the
repairs.
Mm-hmm. Basically, repairs. It is the appraisal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the appraisals on VA, there's no other way to say it, they are slow. So you don't get an appraisal. I don't care who you go to mortgage company-wise. You do not get a fast VA appraisal because the VA assigns those, right?
Correct.
The mortgage company doesn't have any pull on which appraisers are going to be selected. And you might get an appraiser that hasn't done an appraisal in 10 years.
Out of Enid.
Yes, yes.
Coming to Oklahoma City.
Out of a different area. And then, so it takes forever. And they can turn it back into the VA after they've had it for 2 weeks and say, I don't have time, I can't do this. So then it's delayed again while it gets assigned to somebody else. And then they point out repairs that you sometimes don't see on conventional and FHA. And now I'm seeing less and less of that, but it's kind of a crapshoot because it's depends on the appraiser. It's the appraiser's judgment. So, Matt, what's the solution to that? There's no solution.
Well, and to kind of elaborate on what you're talking about, if a buyer is going FHA or conventional financing, the lender, we are in control of that appraiser as much as possible because they are within a pool of appraisers approved by us. When it's a VA appraiser, VA, you know, we place that order through VA site, VA dictates that appraiser. And then, as a lender, we don't. You're right. We don't have that push. We don't have that control. We don't have that urgency. We have.
Well,
to,
we have. We have you, to, as the lender, have the urgency, but the right. appraiser has right. no urgency at all.
But put yourself in our shoes. We can nudge a little bit from a follow-up perspective, but we don't want to irritate either, because this appraiser has no allegiance to us, so we don't want to nudge too much, because he may drop us further down the line.
Well, and he may decide not to do it and just turn it back into the VA, then you're delayed even further. Right. And I say he, many appraisers are women, so it's he or she.
Right.
So
we got to be careful.
Okay. Well, how can we get the appraiser, how can we get a VA offer looked at and considered when it comes to a contract? Mark, you submit contracts.
I didn't.
Offers.
Yep. Yeah, just had a VA offer that was accepted a couple weeks ago. And there's different parts of an offer. Price is one of them. The type of loan is another. Timing, the inspection process. There's different components. And so what you have to sit down with a buyer is to figure out what is the best deal that they can put together. What is the best offer? Is it more money? Can they go up on the price? Can they go up on the earnest money? Can they decrease the amount of time or increase the amount of time? Sometimes they want longer, and you figure that up, and then you give your best shot at it. And then you try to discover what is the seller really needing? Are they needing more time? Are they needing an assurance? Because the part with the VA loan and FHA, VA is really like this. FHA is a little bit like this. Sellers want assurance that the deal is going to go to the closing table. That they want that feeling of confidence that this buyer is going to buy.
And so how can you get that if it's VA?
You have to just do the most that you can pat it around to make comfortable. Like if it's the seller, if you can discover the seller is more important with time, and then you have to be clear that the appraisal process is something that you really have no control over. And you can do an appraisal gap guarantee is the best thing you can do, which means dear, you put it in the contract that basically says, dear seller, if the appraisal comes in $5,000 under our offer, we as the buyer will cover that $5,000.
We'll pay that in cash up front. Mm-hmm. And that's the most common way we're getting our offers accepted right now is the appraisal gap guarantee. Now, our contracts are written that to where on VA we can't put in a number there, but on FHA you can just put in a number. Like we had one yesterday that was 205. Everything seems to be listed for 205 lately. So, but anyway, it only had to appraise for 200.
200. So. Yep, to get it in. We'll be back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, here with Becky Ivins herself and the gentleman from SWBC, Dean Riddell, and Matt McLean, our money men. Our word of the day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 728-3700.
I need to comment on Robbins Roofing because we had hail last night, not here in the metro.
Did we really?
Well, not here in the metro, but right on the edges of the metro. So if you're in our listening audience and you need help determining whether or not you need to file an insurance claim, call Larry Robbins. And to find his number, just go to BeckyIvins.com and look at Becky's favorites. So, our word of the day is a phrase. It's a term, appraisal gap guarantee. Now, it took Google about 2.5 minutes to come up with that to see what they say it is. So an appraisal gap guarantee clause is the clause that states that if the home were to appraise lower than the stated purchase price, the buyer will bring money above appraised value or make up the difference, basically, between the appraisal and the purchase price. Because you can't borrow. I mean, you can borrow 96.5% on an FHA loan, but that's of the appraisal price or the purchase price, whichever is less.
Right.
So if it appraises for $100,000, we'll make this easy math, you can borrow $96,500. But if the purchaser agreed to pay $105,000, that purchaser is going to have an $8,500 cash out of pocket. They've got to come up with the $5,000 above appraisal price, and the $3,500 mm-hmm. down payment. So appraisal gap guarantee is something that I'm seeing on about half of our contracts because buyers want the house, and they've got some cash. So they're going to pay above appraisal price.
I had a buyer that we just did our inspections yesterday that went great, and we finally won on the 8th offer I had written for them.
Gosh.
I think it's the most I've ever had to write to someone to get to a successful offer. Because most of the time I can figure out what's the right.
What financing was it?
It was FHA.
FHA.
And we started out not doing the appraisal gap guarantee. And then we talked about, okay, do you have the ability? Do you have a family friend who loves you? You have a family member that loves you that, you know, and so we
that
were
can
able
to come up with money to help you?
Correct. Okay. So that we did a $3,000. They could come up with a way that they could do a $3,000 appraisal gap guarantee. And we did that on the last five that I wrote for them. And then what? And they ended up with a home that was the best one that they've ever looked at. It's right over they have a pond out their front door. It's gorgeous. They're real excited, first-time home buyers.
Did you find that you had to explain to the realtor that
yes.
was accepting the offer that there was an appraisal gap guarantee without there being that verbiage in there?
Yes. Every time I do an appraisal gap guarantee, I always communicate with the realtor to make sure they know what this means. They know it so that they can explain it to their client.
Because we didn't put any of that verbiage in that offer at all. What we did is on an FHA loan addendum, it says the property must appraise for no less than, so we'll use our $200,000 for an example, for no less than $200,000, but the buyer is offering $205,000 purchase price. So the buyer is going to pay, if it doesn't appraise for $205,000, the buyer will pay the difference between the $200,000 and the $205,000.
Yep. The wording, buyer's willing to pay $5,000 above the appraised value, not to exceed the purchase price of $205,000. So it's boom.
So you put that in the offer?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you put that?
On the FHA in the extra box.
And you know you did not have to do that, right?
Correct.
But you have to bring the attention to the other
realtor. Correct. It's one of those that you want to make sure they understand what those numbers mean when you say it only has to appraise for 200, but our purchase price is 205.
Yeah. So referring back to paragraph number 2 of the FHA loan addendum, the property only has to appraise for that. So appraisal gap guarantee. Do you want to talk about escalation clauses?
Oh my gosh, I love this. Yes.
We have an escalation addendum to our contracts now that was written by the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission. It's an OREC form. It says right on the form, the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission does not recommend and they basically don't like the escalation clause. Yet they have a form for it. I know, isn't that crazy? And it's okay. It's okay with me if OREC doesn't like it. But if it's not illegal and it's going to benefit my client, I'm using it. I like the escalation clause.
I love it.
So what is it?
I love it. So escalation clause, it's basically, I had a buyer last go, oh, this is basically eBay. I'm like, okay, yeah. Get it. That's the way they understand. Saying a buyer is basically saying, dear seller, we are going to offer you $200,000. But if you have a better offer than $200,000, we are willing to beat that offer by X amount. We'll say $500. We're willing to beat that offer by $500 up to $210,000. Mm-hmm. And so you submit that. And so when you have a multiple offer situation, and I ask my buyer, well, if you're offering $200,000, would you be extremely sad if you lost it and you knew it went at $205,000? Oh, that would be awful, Mark. We would just be so mad at that. Well, why don't we use this escalation and we say we're going to do $200,000, then we're willing to go up to. And at what point do you say that's just that too much, it's not ours, we're going to keep rolling, we're going to keep looking at other houses? So I use it as often as I can when I know there's going to be a multiple offer situation.
Right. What does a lender think about that?
Well, I have a question for you guys. So then we're into multiple issues, and not only the escalation clause, but the appraisal gap as well, correct?
Right. And typically an escalation clause comes with an appraisal gap guarantee because a savvy realtor is not going to let a seller sign an offer into a contract unless there are some assurances that that's going to close. Of course, seller gets to do what they want to do. It is their property. But they're not going to do that without a warning from us. Like, well, you can take this $212,000 offer if you want to, but it depends on getting the property appraised for $212,000, and that's not going to happen. Here are the comps. Do you see any of them that are close to that price? Well, no. Okay. The appraiser won't either.
Right, yeah.
And they now appraisers are using pending sales now to justify if it's been on the market 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, or 3 days and it goes pending, the appraiser assumes that it is for full price. because if it sells right away, typically it is full price right now. And I had an appraiser that came in low on something, and he had used his big justification for the price was pending offers. And I said, so you're under the assumption that those that closed in 0 and 1 days are sold for full price, right? And he said, exactly. I said, how wrong is that? Those didn't sell for full price. Those sold for over full price, over list price.
Mm-hmm.
So let's consider that for a minute. Can you raise your appraisal based on that? Well, no. He said, once it closes, I can use an above list price, but I can't justify that because we don't know what it sold for. And the seller is not supposed to, I mean, the realtor or the seller aren't supposed to be advertising what it goes under contract for. So
in answer to your question, what does the lender think about the escalation clause and or the appraisal gap clause? It's really a matter of communication, right? You need to let us know so we can let you know that your buyer has those funds to make up either the gap or and or the escalation clause.
And realtors, there was a big discussion on our Facebook group about, are you requiring proof of funds for an appraisal gap guarantee? Because they'll do the appraisal gap guarantee and then they can't perform on it when it comes down to it. So savvy realtors are requiring that appraisal gap guarantee, and typically it's between list price and purchase price is what the appraisal gap is for. Now, sometimes it's going to appraise for less than list price even. Then you've got problems. You got troubles. But most of the time that gap is, say it's listed for $200 and someone decides they're willing to pay $212. Then you want to see that $212 proof of funds. You want to see the $12,000 plus the down payment or whatever their financial situation is. And the seller needs to know that they've got the ability to perform on the extra money.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what's that difference versus someone who wants to put 20% down in a standard contract? No one's asking us to validate monies. I mean, we're validating them by providing the pre-approval letter.
But we do that. If you don't say it in your letter, we call the lender. If the lender doesn't state that someone, say, is putting down so much money, then and that they verified the funds, we call the lender and ask, have you verified the down payment funds? Because you don't, if you've got five offers sitting there or 20 offers sitting there, which is
today
sometimes the case as well, you want to know that you're helping your seller pick the best one. You don't want to pick one that doesn't have the down payment funds, or maybe they think they can get to the down payment funds. Maybe they think they can withdraw from their 401k, but maybe there's a waiting period of 30 days after something or something like that. Well, you need to know that so that you can help them pick the best offer.
And who you have as a lender really, really matters. We'll be back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with our money men from SWBC, Dean Riddell and Matt McLean. And why don't you give them a call at 405-858-7770. If you are needing financing for a loan or thinking about refinancing, they're the go-to people.
Yeah. Can you refinance on an FHA?
Yes, you can.
So what is there an advantage to doing it?
You know, what we're seeing today, partly because of appreciation, is a lot of people who previously did an FHA loan, maybe they were first-time buyers. Maybe credit score was not off the charts, but now they're flipping into a conventional loan, refinancing, seeing that MI being reduced or going away.
Right, get rid of that monthly.
So, Becky, sometimes it's not all about rate. I mean, if you're able to go from a 3 7/8 FHA loan to a 3 1/4 conventional, you initially go, there's not, really a significant drop in rate.
But you get rid of the...
You're eliminating PMI or MIP.
Almost 1% extra in PMI or MIP.
MIP.
Right. Okay, well, that's
so
good.
You know, and Mark touched on it, and give Matt or I a call. And we've said this same story, guys, for years. But if you are ready to buy a house and you've got a short window to close, communicate that. You know, Matt had one this week that from beginning to end, 11 days. So the buyer controls that. If they are responsive and they are disciplined and they give us what they need, everything will run just like it's supposed to. Now, if it's a VA loan, 11 days is going to be tough. But if it is a, and this was a conventional loan, buyer's responsive, buyer listened, buyer trusted, he gave us everything we needed, and lo and behold, we're closing 2 weeks early.
Wow, you closed a conventional loan in 11 days.
11 days from application to close.
That is incredible, and that's one of the reasons why who you choose as a lender matters. Because we as realtors know when we're looking at those approval letters, like we had one this week. Becky, have you ever heard of this lender? And like, no, never heard of them.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they're bad, though.
No, it just means we don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the respect that SWBC Mortgage gets when you see their name at the bottom really means something, and not just to us. I mean, it means something metro-wide because you don't do B and C loans.
Right.
You do A loans, which are qualified people.
Right. Exactly. Now, Becky, we had a call in during the break from Kay, who didn't want to go on the air, but she had a question for us about, are 1960s closed concept homes popular right now? Are they selling?
No, they're not. However, I had my first call from someone wanting to buy a home, and you know what she said? I feel like I'm cooking in my living room. I don't want the open floor plan in my next home. I think I'm going to need to buy a house that was built in the 90s to where you actually have a kitchen. It doesn't need to be a closed-off kitchen like you found in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to see that pendulum swing back a little bit to where you don't feel like you're cooking in your living room.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. I'm seeing a little bit of buyers who are loving the 60s concept, 70s concept, because it was their childhood. Like, it is a memory of their childhood. Anyway, okay. I've showed, like, our home on Northwest 25th, which was partially opened. That's
right.
The key on that is partially opened.
And it's the neighborhood that they're coming back after.
They're coming to the...
The little boxy room house.
Yep. And that one sold on Northwest 25th. I got a crazy story with that we need to share at some point in
time. Well, we can do that on our next show.
It's a great,
We want to thank Dean Riddell and Matt McLean from SWBC Mortgage for being our guest today. And we love the fact that we can just open our mouth, ask a question, and you guys know the answer.
It's a fun relationship, Becky.
It is. It is. It's a very valuable relationship.
To find them, go to BeckyIvins.com. Click on Becky's favorites. Kay, give us a call at 722-3232, and we'll talk about your 1960s home and how to get it sold. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. We look forward to seeing you next week here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move.